2016 presents... Hello everyone and welcome back for another episode of On Location. We've got a real treat for you this evening as Bill Too talks to us about his way of shooting astrophotography with film. It's really interesting, and if this doesn't inspire you to get out after dark with your camera, then I don't know what will. Stay tuned to the end of the show to hear how you could take part in the Sunny 16 Presents feed. Until then, sit back and enjoy listening to Bill talk stars.
Hello everybody, my name is Bill Too and I love taking astrophotography photos. I'm going to talk to you today about what I do when I take star trail photos on film. Now, a couple of caveats. This is what I do rather than what you should do, and you'll probably find, if you do some research, much better advice on the interwebs. Nonetheless, for the Sunny 16 Presents tonight, Bill Too does star trails. Now, I fell in love with images of the Milky Way and the Milky Way itself, of course, about 25 years ago when I was in an outback opal mining town with no town electricity. So it was a very dark town. And we were staying in an old opal mine converted to a motel. And we were sitting on deck chairs on the roof of the opal mine, which was a little hillock. No town lights, a very clear sky, and the Milky Way was directly above us. I'd seen images of the Milky Way, of course, growing up, but having grown up in towns and cities, for one reason or another, I'd never thought that the Milky Way still existed. I may even have thought it was an historical object, something that people used to be able to see but had gone away somehow. I was astonished to see the Milky Way core from horizon to horizon and to realize that the Milky Way wheeled and moved across the sky, much like the moon and the sun does, but in other ways quite differently, as it seemed to spin as much as rise and set. When I started taking digital photography more seriously, I realized I could capture the Milky Way on digital images, and I've been doing that for 5 or 6 years now. When I got back into film photography, of course, I also wanted to know if I could make astrophotography captures on film. Now, there's not as much information about that as on digital captures of the Milky Way, and it's probably because capturing the Milky Way on digital is much, much easier. Capturing it on film has several challenges. One is that the ISO of the film doesn't make it amenable to capturing the Milky Way with pinpoint stars. You need relatively short captures of the Milky Way so that its relative motion to the Earth, that spinning and rising and setting motion relative to the Earth because of the Earth's spin, means that longer exposures results in star trails rather than pinpoints. This is relative to your focal length. For example, if you have a very long focal length, for example, like a telescope, you can actually see the stars move in your visual field because of the rotation of the Earth over minutes and sometimes even over seconds. So the formula is 500 divided by your focal length, and that tends to be the maximum exposure you can make before the stars stop being pinpoints and more like star trails. On digital, I tend to shoot very wide, somewhere in the range of 14 to 18 millimeter lenses, and that gives me about 30 seconds of exposure before I develop star trails. The other issue, of course, is that in film, there's an effect called reciprocity failure, which means you usually need to expose the film for a lot longer than you have actually metered for. So that critical exposure time of 500 over your focal length blows out way beyond the point where you've just got pinpoint stars and you start having star trails. So I tend to embrace that and shoot for star trails rather than pinpoint stars on film. Now, when I'm shooting astrophotography, there are a few things that I'm calculating or looking for. The most important thing, of course, is the composition. Now, I don't tend to shoot the stars alone. The reason for this is not because they're not beautiful, but the access to the stars is universal. As long as you've got a sky above, as we all do, we more or less have equal access to the same scene of the night sky, at least in the same hemisphere that you're living in. So for uniqueness, to make the photo mine instead of universal, I tend to want an interesting foreground element, which is the main subject of the photo, with the stars and star trails, if you like, more as a backdrop or a secondary subject. What I'm looking for in general is a large foreground object with graphic properties such as a tree or a grain silo, a structure that if it's poorly lit you can still see an interesting shape from. Now, the aspect from which you want to photograph that foreground subject can be quite important because the Milky Way has a season and that season determines in which part of the sky you're going to see it. The season starts in about March and finishes in about November. The season describes when the Milky Way core, the galactic core, is visible. Between November and March, the Milky Way core is rising at sunrise and setting before sunset, so you won't see it in a night sky. It's not visible, of course, in a sunlit sky. From early Feb to March, the Milky Way starts to become visible just before dawn and then gets washed out by the rising sun. In October and November, the Milky Way is setting just after sunset so that it's visible for a short time before it sets after the sun has set. Therefore, in the early season, it's visible in the east, and in the late season, it's visible in the west. So if you have a particular aspect from which your foreground element should be shot, it might only be best to shoot it if you want the Milky Way in the background at a certain time of the year. Shooting star trails makes the Milky Way itself a little bit less important to shoot. You don't need the Milky Way in particular to get effective star trails. So any aspect of the foreground subject could be shot for star trails in the background. The only issue would be whether you want to include one of the galactic celestial poles. The celestial pole is the apparent point around which the stars seem to rotate. In the north, of course, that's the North Star. In the south, it's calculated by drawing lines through the Southern Cross and a bisecting line between the pointer stars, and where those two lines intersect is the south celestial pole. If you include the celestial pole in your photo of a star trail, you'll see the stars seeming to rotate like a whirlpool around that point. That can be quite pleasing as a compositional element. You probably want quite dark skies, and the reason is you can see more stars in a dark sky. Stars are very dim, and of course the reason why you don't see stars in the daytime, even though they're above us all the time, is because the contrast between the stars and the sky is so poor, it's not possible to see the stars at all. And also, for example, if you had a candle in a dark room, you'd see it easily, but a candle in the midday sun, you'd almost not see the flame at all. The sensitivity of our eyes are turned all the way down in daylight that we can't see the stars because our eyes are just insensitive to them. On film, it's a little different. It's all about the contrast. So you want to have as dark a sky as possible so that the dim stars are contrasted against it and therefore visible. Dark skies means less light pollution, which means being as far away from towns and cities as possible. Even if you don't actually see it, the light from cities and towns interacts, refracts and reflects off atmospheric particles so that the sky is actually really bright. If you take a long exposure of a sky over a city, you'll see that the sky will be blown out and overexposed. If you do that in a dark place with no city lights, you'll still get quite a black sky. Although the setting of the sun can take quite a long time, and even an hour or an hour and a half after sunset, you will still see a lot of blue in the sky because of the residual light rays. So dark skies are important, but not critical. You can, in fact, get pretty good Milky Way and astro shots if you'd simply point your camera away from the city centre and if you're at the edge of the city. In Sydney, for example, if you go to one of the beaches that are not too close to the city and point out to sea, you'll get a chance at a fairly decent Milky Way or star trail shot without the interference of light pollution from the city. The film I like to use is as high speed a film as I can get. It used to be Natura 1635mm, but now that costs a fortune as it's no longer manufactured. And I've shot CineStill 800 in 120, but of course you could try Lomography 800 or Portra 800 equally. The reason I shoot the fastest film I can get is because the exposure times are so long. I typically expose for an hour, sometimes half an hour if I can get away with it. And a one-stop difference at those rates can mean 1 or 2 hours extra exposure, which is my whole night gone just for one shot. There's no reason why you can't use lower speed film as long as you've got the time available to make your exposure. You need a camera that can shoot in B mode, and you need a camera ideally that can adjust shutter speeds. So I've never really thought about trying this on a point and shoot camera. I've always only used cameras with manual settings. I generally shoot wide lenses because I like epic landscapes and wide skies, but the lens you use is really a question of creative control rather than anything to do with whether wide lenses are intrinsically better for Milky Way shots. The exposure calculation can be a little tricky. For the star trails themselves, I found that you can get a pretty good star trail even with a 15-minute exposure if the sky is full of stars. if there are less stars in the sky, the star trails need to be longer to be more apparent or more pleasing. So an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours exposure if you're shooting in an urban environment with light pollution to make the star trails stand out more. At least 15 minutes, but you can get away with 15 minutes with a dark sky and lots of stars visible. The happy medium, I reckon, is probably about an hour exposure. And that's a minimum time rather than necessarily the maximum time. Calculating the exposure for the foreground element, of course, is also very critical, but tends to be a lot harder. Using a light meter becomes quite tricky because in very dark environments, the light meters just don't have enough light to work. Using an exposure guide like a app or pamphlet can be very useful. And then if you're going to use light painting techniques, you need to account for this too. I've shot next to highways where ephemeral lights from passing cars and trucks have been very useful for lighting foreground elements, but it makes calculating what exposure you need for this really quite difficult, and it becomes a slight guessing game. Fortunately, because of reciprocity failure, it can be quite difficult to blow out the highlights on film, even with bright lights like headlights. But you probably don't want to push that too far. Reciprocity failure is when you need to make a very long exposure on film and the linear relationship between ISO, f-stop and exposure fails. Normally on film, you get twice the exposure if you open the shutter for twice as long, or you open the f-stop by one stop. With reciprocity failure and long exposures, you no longer get twice the exposure when you open the shutter one stop or expose the film twice as long. In fact, to get twice the exposure, you might need to increase the exposure by several factors. I used to guess at this by opening the shutter for two stops longer, but this was a very, very rough estimate, and I've subsequently learnt that it's usually quite an inaccurate one. Try and use a reciprocity guide or known reciprocity data if you have that available. Or a better way of calculating reciprocity, at least as an estimate, is to increase your exposure time to the power of 1.3. Some folks will do their own reciprocity charts for films they shoot frequently. I think it's quite a technical exercise and not something that I've embarked on. Of course, once you've got the data for the film, you've got that forever. And if you're shooting one film all the time, it might be worth your while to try and calculate that. My film choices tend to be reasonably eclectic and I'm not very technical. So that's also part of the reason I haven't gone down this pathway. And while I'm thinking about this and before I forget, if you're in a dark environment, please make sure that you've got safety in mind, that you've dressed for the environment. For example, reasonably sturdy shoes and boots if you're going to the countryside. Make sure you dress for the weather and bring some lights because you don't want to fall in a hole or fall off a cliff that you couldn't see. Developing the film is fairly straightforward. There's nothing special with astrophotography in developing the film. I have learnt a trick from Edward Conde from the Ultra Low ISO Club podcast and the Grainy Days podcast. He also publishes in Lomography. He had a technique for preserving your C41 chemicals if you were pushing coloured film of a mini stand development in Rodinal before processing in C41. So for a colour film that's been pushed, you could push process the colour film by having an initial development in Rodinal, 1 in 100 dilution, with a 10-minute stand, after which you went on to develop the film in C41 chemicals normally instead of push processing the C41 chemicals. To my understanding, this preserves your C41 chemicals rather than using it up too quickly. The scanning and processing is no different from what you would normally do into your own taste. Now, you can get shots of the Milky Way with pinpoint stars in a couple of ways, which I don't normally do. One is simply to push process and push photograph the Milky Way on very fast film. To see an example of this, you could look at Jason DeFreitas' Instagram account at jase.film, where he has shot a sequence of 150 exposures on Kodak P3200 to create a short film of the Milky Way setting. I think pushing the film in this way tends to result in quite grainy images. You can see similar images on Michael Bartasek's Instagram account from the Ultra Low ISO podcast at MBARTOSEK at Instagram. The other way you can get Milky Way photos on film is to use a star tracker. It's a gimbal that compensates for the rotation of the Earth so that the stars tend to remain still in the sky, at least relative to the camera. Again, if you go to Jason DeFreitas' account, you can see a beautiful image of the Milky Way with a homemade large format camera using slide film. It's really quite astonishing. For star trail photos in all sorts of environments with all sorts of film, check Jong Lee Photography, Jonglee Photography, all one word, and on Instagram. His Milky Way astrophotography star trails are quite diverse and quite astonishing. For fine art photography of star trails on large format film in the Australian outback, on salt pans with huge mirrors, check Murray Frederick's webpage. Murray Frederick's photos in particular were an inspiration to me to start trying this on film. My account on Instagram is at BILLTHOO for film photography, at BILL.THOO for film and digital, and BILL_ASTRO for my astrophotography. Thank you and hope you have fun with your astrophotography on film and star trails. Feel free to direct message me on Instagram if you have any questions, and I'd encourage you to do your own research, as I'm sure you're likely to find more information that will be helpful to you on the internet, or at least, and even more likely, a better way to do it. Till next time, Bill 2.
Thank you so much, Bill, for that. That was a really wonderful and interesting piece. Thank you also to everybody who has tuned in and checked out the Sunny 16 Presents feed. We're slowly building up the content on here, and we hope that you're getting some enjoyment out of it. It's great fun for us finding awesome stuff like this to share. Like I said, I just hope that it is being of benefit to you too. Also want to say an extra huge thank you to everybody who continues to support us on Ko-fi and enables us to do stuff like this and to keep the feed going and to generally expand and explore doing different stuff. Special thanks to Jeff Greenstein for our introduction this week. If you are one of our monthly supporters and you'd like to feature on an intro for the show, then please check out the post on our Ko-fi page and send one in to us. Likewise, get in touch with us at sunny16presents@gmail.com. If you want to talk to us about this episode or any of the other ones on the feed, or if you've got your own idea for something that you would like to share with people on the Sunny 16 Presents feed, that's what it's here for. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back with you again soon.